Welcome back to Real Phonies, where we take a love for movies and television and combine it with very little knowledge about movies and television. I'm your host, Christian. Join with me, for the first time in a long time, my co-host, Joseph.
Yellow.
And Jehu.
Cuckoo!
God, it's good to hear the caca again.
Can I tell you, I feel like your radio voice has deepened and enriched more.
I've been awake since like 3:30 this morning, so I actually just think it's where I'm at in my voice right now.
It sounded more NPR than TK this time.
Oh, thank you. TK guy.
You know, anytime I get in my car, you know how your phone, like, takes note of places you go and like thinks,
sure.
Oh,
in the creepiest way. Yes, of course.
Anytime I'd get in the car about 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon, be like, oh man, we're going to it's like, no man, we're not going to
oh, that makes me sad.
Now Joseph, everyone knows where Joseph lives. We're here to discuss Wicked, directed by John Chu, starring Ariana Grande, Cynthia Erivo. God, I forgot Fiero's name right then. That guy that Ariana was banging on the side while they both were married.
SpongeBob
SquarePants. Michelle Yao, Jeff Goldblum, Bowen Yang. That's about it for
casting. The voice of Peter Dinklage.
And the voice of Peter Dinklage. That is true. Jonathan Bailey. There it is.
Good job.
Yep. You know this story. Based on the Broadway play, it's the first half. It's as long as the total musical, but it's only the first half of the musical, where Galinda and Elphaba meet at Shiz, and they become best friends, and they learn magic together.
So, I think you guys have a history with this. I do
we
not.
We do, yes.
So,
did you know any of the music?
I want to save that for later.
Okay.
So, I just know this as an outsider. One thing I wanted to ask, which came first, the musical or the book?
The book came first.
The book came first. Because I can remember a time in like the mid-aughties that just every girl had that book in their hand. They had a worn-out copy of that book in their hand. I wasn't shopping at the time, but I felt like anyone that was needed to be reading that fucking book.
Now, to be fair, one, there are several sequels to the actual Wizard of Oz that are, I'm guessing, whatever we consider canon for the Wizard of Oz. As far as I know, Wicked has nothing to do with those books, and the musical Wicked also doesn't have that much to do with the book Wicked. Like, there's dramatic differences far as I know. The only thing I know about the book, wholly just from probably Twitter and the internet, is there's more beast fucking. But
the second question I wanted to ask was, before we get into how we feel about it and stuff, was, in the musical, does the messaging go as hard as it does in this? Or do I just feel like it does because of the times? Like, there was like the part where they say, put them in a cage young so they don't learn to speak. I was like, is that a fucking Rage lyric? Are we about to hear a Rage song in this?
I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say no because you spend a lot less time doing anything in the show than you do in the movie.
Okay. Yeah.
The musical is basically song to song almost. I don't remember a lot of those kind of moments.
Well, I mean, that is because there's a few points early in this where there's so long between a song, I forget that it's a musical. I'm like, oh shit, why is this person singing?
You're right. It feels like almost, I would say popular to the end is pretty steady on music, but before you get to popular, it is kind of like every 10-15 minutes that there's probably a song, but I've read the book once, like 10 years ago, and I got to the point where they go to a strip club and someone has sex with a tiger, and I was like, this is not for me. And I stopped.
Okay, so I guess I did remember that about the book, that I feel like it was more...
smut.
Yeah, more tearing down these sort of tropes than, like, you know, telling a story behind it like this sort of is.
That's probably true. I'm assuming you haven't read it.
I have not read it, no.
Yeah. But I have seen the show. You've seen it.
Yes.
And I've listened to the music a ton.
Many a times.
But you know what's interesting, which is, this is going to be my transition into talking about what we think of the film, is I like the music in Wicked. I think it's well written. I think it's well scored. I think the words are pretty good. I think they use a really cool thing of like incorporating musical themes and like references to the Wizard of Oz score in cool, fun, new ways in the Wicked soundtrack. Very rarely do I ever just sing it. Very rarely does it ever just pop into my head. It's something I will listen to. I'm like, oh man, I'd love to listen to, you know, The Wizard and I or Defying Gravity or whatever. Very rarely do I sing it. The thing I think the music does really, the movie does really, really well is that the versions of these songs get stuck in my head for fucking days. I think they're really well scored. They're really well sung. And that has a lot to do with the leads. I don't think this movie is nearly as great as people make it out to be. I think it's a pretty good movie. I don't think it's the best movie of last year. I do think that Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande are great in those roles. I think they really knock it out of the park. The only other thing I'll say before I turn over to you guys is I think, and I want to get more into it when we get into spoilers, but I think the set design and the look of this movie is excellent for what it's supposed to be.
100% agree on that part.
Yeah.
This is a great looking movie as far as this, these unreal things looking very real.
Yeah. It's better than Transformers.
I am so torn about this movie because it's one of those things where I also really enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. It is a really long movie mm-hmm. for what it is. Like you said, it's the length of probably the whole musical, but for half of the content of the musical. But it doesn't feel long. It didn't feel long at all to me the whole time. And yeah, I think it is like a really like one of the best adaptations I've seen of a different style of media brought into mm-hmm. into film form, but I still just want to complain about a lot of stuff about it.
It wouldn't be the podcast.
That's called podcasting.
I think that is called podcasting because like yeah, I just like we'll get into it. But why is it so long? I agree. I think it's a great looking movie. I think the casting's good. I think the music's good. But there's just like so many choices in it that pad this runtime that I'm just like, they bring nothing to the movie to me. Mm-hmm. They didn't slow the movie down, obviously. Again, I didn't feel like it slowed, but I'm just like, you didn't bring anything new to it. I agree. The visuals are great, but I don't know what else this runtime was for.
Mm-hmm.
See, I agree, it was really long. Well, before we even get into that, Sarah and her friend Brittany have a long history with this. They had seen
the They're movie the before. Target audience.
Right.
Shocking.
100%. And so they had seen this together way before you guys told me that I was watching it. I had pretty much thought I wasn't going to like it because Sarah was singing the songs a lot around the house and they sounded like, you know, grocery list musicals. Just where we're saying a lot of things in a row that are happening, but not something I would really want to sing along to.
In Wicked's defense, that is all musicals.
I mean, I agree, and that's one of the things that keeps me away from musicals a lot. But
it's better with the backing track.
I don't think she was representing it well. Not as her abilities as the vocalist. I want to be clear. I don't want to get my ass kicked. Just in her choices of what she was deciding to sing at the top of her lungs. I liked this a lot better than Transformers. I really, 3 hours going into it, I was like, fuck you guys. You know, but it's weird because the length, it feels like for more than 3/4 of this movie, it's starting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it doesn't... Yeah, feels like everything that happened before they get on the train in a movie should be in like the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Like when the adventure starts. But, you know, I liked hanging out in this world. I thought it was cool and fun. I like these people. I'm not sure about Ariana Grande, man. She just looks so hungry.
She does look
hungry. She's so goddamn skinny, and she looks like she just can't compose a thought because she just wants a fucking sandwich so bad. Somebody give that bitch a sandwich. But again, I liked it. I thought everybody in it was good. I really thought it looked great. You know, it was one of those things that after it was over, I was wondering about technical things about it, which is, mm-hmm. you know, always a good thing, you know, for me. You know, like, for example, it felt like at times when they were doing the song numbers that maybe they were singing along to a pre-recorded track, but then it would switch to live. Like, it would feel like it was in that room. And I don't know if that's what was actually happening, but it was something I noticed, and I'm not exactly a noticer on musicals.
I'm so glad you mentioned something about, you know, I We're all in our summary bit before the spoilers, but I don't know what spoilers are for the second movie. So,
I mean, you know, you say that, but going into it, I knew the gist of it was that the real protagonist of this was the Wicked Witch.
Yeah.
But I thought it was like going to be a story of where, you know, they were very much together the whole time and there's a split where one goes to good, one goes to evil, but it looks like the other side. And it really isn't like that because for the first half of the movie, Ariana Grande is insufferable. I just want to strangle her the whole time. Like she says nothing redeemable until, you know, like a plot point that I guess we'll wait till spoilers to say.
But anyway, my point, I was going to say, it's interesting that that's a thing that you pointed as a positive to me. Because, first off, the director, John M. Chu, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is different from John Chu, who is an actor who's Spike Spiegel, right?
I think you're right.
Yeah, okay.
I think that guy is also named John Chu. I never made that connection.
I'm either really racist or I'm right. I'm not sure.
Well, nobody watched that show.
That's so a good point.
You're fine.
Who's Harold and Harold and Kumar.
Yeah, they did watch that.
Because on the press tour, which I think we can all agree was a little too long for this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? There's a second one.
I know. We're not. I don't think we have it in us.
We're making space for Defying Gravity. Right now.
Like that was a repeated talking point. It was like, oh, we did the live singing. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, and yeah. You know, fucking Les Mis muddied the waters on this one for everybody. Man. And I don't know how I feel about that, but one, I disagree with you. I didn't feel like it added anything to this movie, in the sense that like having more space in between the like,
right.
I don't know. Part of a musical is like, it's a production. When they do a song, it's a song. It's not like part of a song and then they walk a few steps to another set piece and then they keep doing the song more.
So that was another thing I was going to ask is, are those songs always presented like that?
No.
Because there's two or three of those songs like, okay, well, this shit's, oh, here
no,
we go.
So the whole thing was they let the performers kind of like run the show as far as how the pacing and the tempo and stuff worked. Mm. And then they went in the back and did the backing tracks and whatever. But like, it didn't do anything for me, but just like add weird spaces in the movie. It added like probably a couple minutes of movie and just like weird breaks in a song that like I didn't enjoy because then I was like, I guess we're stopping the song now for a little bit.
I mean, definitely, I guess it would be the equivalent of like you were watching a band and after every chorus they did like a free jazz break.
Yeah.
It would be like if they stopped playing their instruments and then walked to a different part of the stage and then kept playing their instruments.
That is more correct.
I think the only two times it really bugged me.
Popular drove me nuts.
Popular is one. It's not that long in Popular, I don't think. It's really long in Dancing Through Life.
Yeah.
And what bugged me about that is I actually think the movie version of Dancing Through Life is arguably the best version. I kind of fucking hate that song. But that version is excellent.
Look, here's the problem with Dancing Through Life. This is not related to the movie. This is just the it should be like four different songs, but yes. They've just roped it into one song for no reason.
For like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are two different plot points that you can tell, and they're like, we just put the same fucking song.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it doesn't really work.
It does not work.
Also, the break in Defying Gravity is too fucking long.
Way too long.
Yeah, again, it was like, oh, we're starting a different song.
It is an abrupt end.
Yeah.
To the most powerful song, and I think when you listen to the musical version, it does come down, and there is dialogue between the two of them, but you almost kind of lose that emotional moment
mm-hmm.
by completely cutting out the music there, and then, I don't know, I hate that.
There's a whole chase sequence.
Yeah, I don't like it in Defying Gravity.
Let's just get into spoilers.
Yeah.
I feel like we're into spoilers.
It's better than Transformers.
We're all better than Transformers.
I definitely liked it better than Transformers.
I'm glad we got you back on musical theater, because I think the last thing we did was Cats, maybe?
Yeah.
No, we've done stuff since... Cats was the first musical we did, because I was the only one.
Oh, we did the teenage one. The one guy who lies about suicide.
Oh, my favorite episode of the show.
One of my favorite episodes of the show.
So, I don't know if this is a spoiler for part two. I'm curious to know where if you get the gist of where this is going in just this one. But... So you know that she's the Wicked Witch of the... There's the Wicked Witch of the West, the Wicked Witch of the East. Obviously, they're two sisters.
Right.
So we know that Nessa Rose will end up being a Wicked Witch.
Right.
Do you think that it's odd that a crippled person is the most evil person in this movie?
You know what? I thought it was... It's kind of like Training Day, man.
Interesting.
It went so long where if... That we overcorrected that instead of always casting the black guy as a bad guy, like the black guy has never played the bad guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Denzel got that and he killed it. I don't know if this girl killed it, but it was probably nice to be able to, you know.
That's like, the way it is in the musical too, is that that Nessa Rose is just all of her anger is taken out on the world and she's kind of the worst person besides arguably the wizard, but I don't think this girl is good at it. I think it's a part that is poorly written in the movie and in the musical, and I certainly don't think she is elevating
it. Well, I definitely think they had a little bit of a hard time committing to it. Like, they still wanted to make her feel a little too much like you could root for, even though she's doing zero things for you to root for.
Yeah.
She's not sympathetic at all.
Right.
But they try to give her, they try to give her moments of sympathy, but they also try to give her, and this is where I think a lot of the length comes from, is Nessa Rose does kind of flip a script in the second act where she's just fucking awful in the second act of Wicked. This is trying to say, hey, here's some reasons why she might be terrible, and I don't think they're good enough.
I also should have told you this as soon as you asked me that question. So me and Sarah are watching this, right? And we get to the point where she's introduced, and Sarah immediately was like, this fucking bitch.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you got against this cripple girl? I mean, you know, Sarah hates women. We all know that.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect her to hate a cripple girl, but...
Just kind of spoiled it there for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a Nessa Rose fan.
I'm probably going to be coming back to beating the same drum repeatedly during this episode. But one of the things I thought was going to happen in this movie, considering I knew the runtime was 2 hours and 40 minutes, mm-hmm. was, you know, in the musical, everything is like...
Yes.
You know, there's like no time for fucking plot. Like,
right.
What you see as messaging in this movie, I think is 100% post-talk. I think in the musical, there's like, we need something else to fill in the gap.
Right.
Here. We'll throw something about animals or whatever.
Right.
But like the only two characters in the original one are really just Elphaba and Glinda.
Yeah.
Right.
And everybody else is like a footnote, and if even that. And so I was like, okay, in this big movie where we're spending a lot more time, we're gonna like meet some more of these characters and like learn more about them, like Nessa Rose and Bach and the what's her face, Michelle Yao, and the wizard.
Yeah.
Just fucking literally anybody, literally anybody, just like add some depth to this this world and these characters, and we don't.
Right.
We don't do any of that for any of them.
No. They do a lot of foreshadowing, like, you see this guy?
Yeah.
He's going to be the Tin Man.
Right. Yeah. I should say, I talked a lot of shit about Ariana Grande, but the lady who plays Elphaba, she's fucking great.
Yeah, Cynthia Erivo is great.
She, you know, not just in her performance and her singing, but just, like, looking at her. Like, her... Not just that she's a pretty lady, like the way she moves, the way she emotes.
She gets lost in that role.
Yeah, she absolutely
like
does.
That makes Elphaba a very believable character. They both got nominated for an Academy Award. I don't have a problem with Ariana being nominated. Cynthia Erivo absolutely deserves to be nominated.
Right, 100%.
She is much better than this movie requires.
Right.
I was about to say, it's a tough part.
Yeah.
Because Glinda is like a fun role, you know, it's a big showy, all over the place kind of role, and Elphaba is like really reserved and to herself and doesn't get to do like a popular song, you know, like she gets a serious, a couple serious power ballady kind of things,
right?
But you know, it's not the same kind of emotional thing. But yeah, I think Cynthia Erivo does a great job in this.
I want to plant my flag while we're talking about this right now and say the best song in the movie is Wizard and I. Her version of Wizard I fucking kills.
And that's one of the few ones in this movie where she's not just like angry or, you know, she's just a girl who's going to school and having dreams and stuff.
Also on Glinda, at some point, you know, while we're watching this, before she actually shows up, Sarah tells me that, you know, Glinda used to be played by Kristen Chenoweth. And I was like, I don't know anything about musicals. You 100% did not have to fucking tell me that. Yeah. That is the energy coming off the screen, right?
Well, that's where it comes from.
Yes. I was about to say, so two things on that. One, there's definitely like, I know there's a lot of different versions of Glinda, but Kristen Chenoweth has a bit of edge to her performance that I think Ariana is missing here, just because I don't know if she has that.
Right.
But two, I supposedly Ariana has like always wanted to be Glinda. This is like a dream, whatever, role for her. There's a certain bit of it where it's like maybe she's like, this is kind of a self-aware poke at herself, and it could be, but I still absolutely think this is just her. Like, this character is just her in real life.
Yeah.
I mean, it does seem like she got pretty deep in this. Didn't she get, like, a tattoo and a boyfriend out of this movie?
She did do those things. I do think, though, I think what I like about Ariana's Glinda is that it is a slightly more understated, believable. Because Glinda in the show is obnoxious.
Yeah.
She is just bubbly personality 100% of the time. I do feel like this is a slightly toned down, you might actually meet this person kind of version of that role. And again, no one's touching Cynthia Erivo in this movie. She's just so much fucking better than everybody else. Right. But I think Ariana's pretty good. And I think Jonathan Bailey's very good as Fiera.
I think he's really good.
Yeah. The bit where he like hops off the horse and they have the back and forth, fucking hysterical. Right. Also, that's his horse from Bridgerton. They were like, you're going to have to ride a horse. And he's like, I got the perfect horse. And the internet loves that guy. By the way, you talk about this movie having like teaching you something or whatever. I'm not one to ever be like, oh, movies have an agenda. Except in Dancing Through Life, the agenda of that song is everyone is bisexual.
Yeah.
You just you may not know it yet, but you want to fuck this dude.
Yeah.
I mean, that does very much seem like a porn parody was about to break out.
Yeah. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about this when it comes to set design. What I think this movie does really, really well, is with the show on Broadway, in my opinion, is very much not trying to be the Oz of the Wizard of Oz.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's very much its own version of that world. And it's kind of like almost steampunky, you know, just bizarre. This really tries to say this is the Oz of the Wizard of Oz. And I texted Joseph at the very beginning, and I'm like, why do the Munchkins all look like they belong in an off-Broadway Fiddler of the Roof? And then I was like, oh, because it's supposed to be 1930s America.
Right.
I think they do a good job of being like, we're going to take this story and try to tell it in the Oz of the Wizard of Oz. Because there are even scenes like when they get to Oz for the first time, like they go through the same things that Dorothy goes through when she gets to Oz. So I think it's a really, like, if they were trying to balance the two, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
I think they do a great job.
I think it, in a way that I wouldn't have believed that they could have done it if you told me. Yep. You know?
Because it's a very small needle.
Absolutely.
Right. To try to thread, and they really do a great job with it.
I do genuinely think just like the realization of this Oz world is one of the greatest achievements of this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it did make me feel like that felt more real to me than any of the characters in this movie, and also made me want to feel like, hey, I want to spend more time here. I want to know what the rest of the stuff looks like.
Yeah. What else do we want to talk about?
What else is there?
The animal plot. I think I hate it specifically because Peter Dinklage.
Ouch! What's wrong with Peter Dinklage?
I'm just kind of out on him.
Don't you think there was a few minutes of awkward conversation when they called this guy about this? Though it's like, you guys are going to try to make me play a fucking Munchkin, aren't you? Like, no, dude, no. He's like, oh, I'm just like a regular guy. No, you're a goat, man. You're a fucking goat.
Yeah, I think I'm just tired of his voice.
All right.
I think that's what it is. But I just don't care.
No, and for sure. Yeah. And again,
did you do a rewatch of Game of Thrones recently or something?
Not recently. He's so good in Game of Thrones.
He is so good in Game of Thrones.
I think that's the other problem is I feel like he got the perfect role. He fucking smashed it.
Right.
And he's just never going to live up to
it. Yeah, I mean, that is fair. That's kind of to my point earlier is like all these things in the musical are like filler, you know, it's just like stuff to talk about between songs.
Well, it only exists to give you the Cowardly Lion.
Right.
This tries to make me care.
Right.
I don't care.
And you don't care.
Just give me the Cowardly Lion.
And then, like, I suspect there is a way to flesh out in a way where it does like emotionally resonate, but that's not what they did here. Yeah. You know, they gave it like maybe 8 more minutes of screen time. And that's it. I don't know.
I guess I liked it more than you guys. I bought into it.
The animal storyline?
Yeah, again.
You're a sucker for animals.
I'm a sucker for animals. But also, I think it was, you know, again, you know, I felt like the messaging was going really hard. And I have been, I don't know, since around November, just burying my head in the fucking sand. Mm. Just trying to avoid knowing.
What happened in November,
Jimmy? No avoiding anything going on in the fucking world. The only news I allow even on my feed is wrestling news, and you can't even fucking escape it there between Hulk Hogan and Linda McMahon. But anyways, so I think I liked it because of that. I was ready to get back out there, and this was like a gateway.
I just want to be clear. I really like this movie. I've watched it probably 5 times. Not necessarily by choice.
Uh-huh.
Right. I share a household with 5 other people. And if all it takes is one person saying, I want to watch Wicked, and my wife's saying, great, let's watch Wicked. But I think it's very good. I do think there was a little bit, maybe I just want to be a pessimist because I feel like the world was like, this is the best fucking movie of the year. I was like, that's not that good.
No.
Like, it's very good. It's a very good musical adaptation. It's a very good musical adaptation of a movie that I thought was going to be trash.
Yep. That seemed like it had to be trash.
There was no way it couldn't be. And they did it. And great. Good thumbs up to them. I'm happy. I'll watch number two, though. I'm much more concerned that one's going to suck.
100%.
But it just I think that's where a lot of my negativity lies. It's like, I feel like I want to pull the world down to my level. But in actuality, it is a very good movie. I've enjoyed watching it. I think the music's very good.
I think it'd make like my top five of this year's movies.
I really don't think I watched that many movies this year, say. So it probably definitely made top five.
Christian and I got kicked off the movie pass, right?
We did.
For not seeing enough, so we definitely didn't see
it. It's just funny, for the months that we haven't been doing the podcast, literally the most media I've consumed in years.
That's impressive.
And you got back with me just when I decided, fuck this again.
It's okay, you got a backlog to work through.
Yeah,
to your point, Christian, and Hurt, you're not aware of this, and I'm sorry to set your expectations in a bad place, but maybe that's a good thing. There's five songs. So Defying Gravity is the intermission break,
right?
The end of act one for the musical. The second act has five songs. One of them is the finale. One of them is a wizard song, so there's really three songs,
right?
And
the wizard song is bad.
You know, all the wizard songs are bad.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I don't think Jeff Goldblum, the vocalist, is going to elevate
it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's a bad song for anybody to sing it. In fact, I think it's designed so somebody who can't sing.
Well, he's not supposed to be sympathetic.
By the way, just a short aside since I brought him up. And I love this guy, but Jeff Goldblum used to be an actor, right?
Yeah, he's not anymore.
He used to play parts and just not show up and just do his Jeff Goldblum.
It's hard
shit.
To see the guy who was in The Fly.
Right, exactly.
It'd be this guy nowadays.
100%.
Which is, this role is Jeff Goldblum nefarious. Which is which is a step above of what he's recently done, but it's certainly not good. And as a person who kind of talked trash on Christopher Walken a little bit when his Dune Part 2, that is Academy Award winning performance compared to Jeff Goldblum in this movie. So, yeah, I mean, there's one good song. There's For Good, I think, is the good song in Wicked Part 2. I fucking hate the Nessa Rose part. I hate the wizard part. I'm not looking forward to this.
No Good Deed's a good song.
No Good Deed is good.
So this has brought up a second career option for me. If what I'm doing in my current life doesn't really work out, just goes to hell. Even though I have absolutely no experience with it, I would love to be a touring drummer for a musical Wicked production.
Right.
That's all I want to do. Just sit in the pit. And bang on those fucking cymbals and shit.
The drum parts are
fucking good. I remember them being good, and I'm like, maybe I just wasn't as wrong. And I've been re-listening to the soundtrack since watching this. I'm like, no, they're so good.
The drum set parts fucking kick in Wicked. I did see this, and I really, I don't know. I have much more to say on this. Obviously, this is when you hear what I'm about to say, you're like, well, the question's out of shit to talk about. I did see a TikTok that was a guy. He's like, no one told me Broadway songs kick ass, and it's just him drumming, doing the drumming parts to Wicked.
Right.
And I commented a thing I have said many times on this podcast, a thing I have said many times to Joseph in private, which is, if somebody had told me in college you could just drum on Broadway tunes and show me how fucking kick-ass they are, I would have finished that music degree.
Right.
Like, I would have graduated with it, and I just would have done that. Because those parts, they sick, dude.
There's so good. Well, since we're running out of things to talk about, can we take a brief aside for the home-wrecking romance of this movie?
Oh, yeah. Hilarious.
Ariana Grande and SpongeBob guy.
Right.
Because here's what I want to know.
She's always liked ugly dudes.
I was going to say, it's not even what I want to know. She had to have instigated this, right?
Yes.
Like, there's no world.
His wife was pregnant with their baby.
Fucking hell. and Rice.
But I know what you're about to say. There's no world where he tries first.
That's what I mean.
Nobody believes in themselves that much.
I've never met this guy. I know he's an actor, so there's some amount of ego. But there's no day that he woke up and looked himself in the mirror and says, I got a shot at fucking Ariana Grande.
Yeah, 100%.
So, 100% you're saying I didn't even realize that's the SpongeBob voice guy.
Well, not SpongeBob voice. There was a very short-lived Broadway musical, and he played SpongeBob in it. Which the music to that is kind of good, too.
Yeah.
You never listen to it. It's a pretty good soundtrack.
So, you know, talking about music on this. So, we're watching this movie, and I am enjoying it, but it is fucking long.
Yeah.
And I've had a bit to drink. And I'm starting to get sleepy, and I'm ready for it to be over. So we're watching it, and I'm like, when is this shit going to end? And Defying Gravity starts. And I had like this, like, movie time shifts back to an old episode of Real Phonies, where you guys were talking about this movie coming out and talking about how are they going to split this in two. And I remember specifically you saying, well, obviously Defying Gravity has to be the end of the first one. So immediately I was like, oh shit, this movie's over.
And then it's 17 minutes of Defying Gravity.
Right. But I knew there was a light at the end of the tunnel. At
that point. You're welcome. I do not like, I think they sing it well. I think she sings it well. I think it's a great rendition of that song. It's a hard cut in the middle of it. There's a lot of shit going on around it. I don't really love the way it's cut. There's like an animated version of this, the film version, which is just like a guard at the tower. And it's just like, and you're like, that's 100% right. It's fucking, the way it's shot is weird. Still, Cynthia Erivo just fucking nails that song. I mean, she nails it.
I just want somebody to cut out all the bits in between. Yeah. Just give me the song, goddammit.
Yeah. It's a really good transition into it, though. I was like, how are they going to get the, you know, the I Hope You're Happy? And I do think the way they hit it is great. I don't know. I'm excited to watch part two. If you're going to take a lot of liberties, that's the one you should take a lot of liberties with. I do know they added two songs for it. So it was seven songs.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Also, Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth are in this movie.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad they got their moment to shine.
Absolutely, yeah.
That was a good, like, ode to the two of them, I think, is giving them that moment. Better than Transformers.
Yeah, better than Transformers.
All right, well, I know it's been a while, so pick whatever you want. But what have we been watching the last while, guys?
There's a couple things I'd love to talk about. Jehu and I never really got to talk about The Acolyte. I know Jehu watched it.
I did.
Did you watch Skeleton Crew?
Boy, did I.
I'd like to talk South Skeleton Crew. I'm not going to talk about either of those things right now. So the big thing I've been doing, and I think this is on the episode we recorded, but maybe not released, maybe I'm wrong. I read a lot in 2024. Right. And I think the last episode we recorded, I said I was about to start the Brandon Sanderson Cosmere books. And I was going to start with Mistborn. Since then, I have read 12 Brandon Sanderson books, which is a daunting task.
I was about to say, for her, can you roughly guesstimate the number of pages that is?
Stormlight Archive alone, I've read 6,000 pages. I think if you count, I would say I'm probably close to 10,000 pages. it is an astronomical amount of reading. But what I want to talk about specifically,
this feels like a completion for you. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like your life has been arcing this direction for a long time.
You're 100% correct. I've never felt more alive than I do reading these books. Like, they're clearly, I am the target audience.
Yeah, 100%.
They're fucking phenomenal. I love every single one of them. They've all been great. However, there is a character. So Brandon Sanderson has a thing called the Cosmere, which is his universe, where there are multiple series all take place in the same universe, and there is some connective tissue. Now, there are like individual planets with their own magic systems, their own characters, but there is a little bit of like Avengery shit going on a little bit. And one of them is a character called Hoid. Hoid is in every single Cosmere book. He may go under as a different name. You typically can find him, people talk about it, as like he'll look the same. A lot of times he'll be at like a noodle shop. It's like a thing is that Hoid likes ramen. He doesn't really eat, but when he talks to people, they'll be eating like a bowl of ramen or whatever. And most of the time, he's not a big character. He's just kind of present, watching the things and things like that. In Brandon Sanderson's latest book, Wind and Truth, which came out in December, Hoid is he's called Wit in that book is his name. He's a really big character. And in every Stormlight Archive book, his part becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And Stormlight Archives is definitely the kind of culmination of the Cosmere. It's the central story at the middle of it. And the reason why I bring this up is I was about a third through Wind and Truth. And again, at this point, I've read 8,000 pages. Right. And this is like the last book. And I'm like, I noticed something about myself when I read Hoid's parts, which is that I read them in Jason Hurt's voice. I everything he says, his character's name again in these books is called Wit, is very like kind of like undermining the serious moment that's going on. The first book, he exists. Instead of a court jester, there's a king's wit, which is to insult everyone but the king. So the king always feels better than everybody right. else. This guy's just constantly there insulting everybody. And the more you get into the book, the more serious Wit becomes, but he still is always kind of cracking jokes. And he just reminds me of you so right much. I was going to write down a list of quotes and be like, you know, did Wit Hoyd say it or did Jay do it? But yeah, just, you know, it may have been 8 months since we recorded this podcast, but you've been with me the whole time, Hurt, whether well, you knew it or not.
Excellent to
yeah.
know. Thanks.
But Brandon Sanderson, better than Transformers. I need more people to read it, even though I realize it's a gigantic undertaking, just so I can talk about it with people.
Right on.
The King's Wit is a powerful idea.
Yeah.
I love the idea of having somebody around me who will just say the funniest, cleverest thing at any given moment. Yeah. And then pretend like I said it.
It's really great. It's really, really great. And nobody can stand him but the king. So he's like, you know, where's Wit? And everyone will be thankful that you can't find him. But mm-hmm. he's kind of bummed because there's not some snarky asshole representing yeah, yeah. him right. all the time. That's it.
Okay, so I know you said I could dole this out over time.
You can.
But I just made a list. I'm just going to rapid fire the whole 8 months. The thing is, I wrote it on a yellow legal pad like a fucking professional. And then I left the house without my goddamn legal pad. But Sarah sent me a pic. So,
oh my God.
I said, hey, teamwork. I texted her. I was like, hey, I left a yellow legal pad on Gene's desk. Take a picture of the second page and send it to me. So here we go. Fall Guy, better than Transformers. More people should have saw this movie. Maxine, better than Transformers. All three of those movies are good. This one's probably the worst one, but I like its time frame the best. Let's see. Deadpool and Wolverine, which is, by the way, when I knew we were on hiatus. When we didn't do Deadpool and Wolverine, I was like, oh, this is going to be a while. Better than Transformers. I'm not even sure this was a movie. Like, it was more like a series of skits. But fuck it. I like the Carol Burnett Show. I like, you know, Saturday Night Live. I like this series of skits. I'm done with the shooting and the stabbing and the balls, though.
They really do that a lot.
Like, it's, you've made that point. You've got every fucking laugh you could get out of that. Let's do another body part. Aliens Romulus, better than Transformers.
Better than Transformers.
Better than Transformers.
Yeah.
Trap. I'm going to go with better than Transformers. I know it's just an infomercial for M. Night's kids' fucking pop star career, but I'm going better than Transformers. Just earlier today, I watched 5 minutes of Speak No Evil, and I was like, fuck this shit. Worse than Transformers. I'm just tired of horror movies telling me about my life. I just want to see some bitches get stabbed. I should also say, in aside, in the middle of the list, even though we talked about it beforehand, we haven't talked about it on the podcast, that we probably should mention that we're recording this at the end of the ice storm.
That's true.
Yes. You know, a once-in-a-lifetime event for Florida. Like, I don't know, like Tuesday afternoon was Tuesday when it first started. I was watching like Channel 3 News and like fucking Jared Willett, whoever was on, and he was like talking about snow plows. And I literally said out loud, calm down, bitch. Like, this is Florida. What are you talking about? You're acting hysterical. Apologies, Jared Willett. This was a real fucking snow.
Yes.
I didn't know if I'd ever see a real snow again in my life. Mm-hmm. I've never seen one in Florida. So, you know, that was fun. Snowstorms, better than Transformers the first day, quickly become worse than Transformers. Because melting snow is the grossest, saddest thing on earth. It makes a specifically depressing type of mud. Okay, let's keep going. Watched a couple shows about the end of the world. Fallout, better than Transformers.
Yeah.
Station 11, better than Transformers. Joseph, you watch Station 11?
I don't know anything about Station 11.
I think you would like it.
Okay.
It has that chick. She's she was a Terminator in the last Terminator. She's in...
The long neck chick?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's, long neck chick.
She's, McKenzie
yeah. Davis.
Yeah, we
she's
got there.
She's very good. And the guy from Yesterday.
It takes place
in two different time frames. It's a really, really good show. And it's about Shakespeare, mostly.
All right.
Shakespeare at the end of the world.
What is that on?
HBO Max.
Okay.
It came out in like 2021, right when no one on Earth wanted to watch a show about the end of the world coming from a virus. Let's see. Wrestling as a whole, fucking better than Transformers.
Dude, the Netflix stuff has been pretty good.
It's so fucking good. I would have consumed a lot more media if it wasn't for all the fucking wrestling I consume. Homicide: Life on the Streets is back on streaming. So much better than fucking Transformers. When people talk about trying to track down the origin of prestige television, they usually go with, you know, The Wire or Oz or The Sopranos. Well, all the DNA of those three shows all came out of Homicide. One of the best shows ever. If you think that Andre Brower's best performance is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you haven't watched Homicide. And that's hard for me to say.
I was about to say he's really good in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Because I always am on the side of comedy. I believe comedy's harder.
Yeah.
I never take that drama's better than the comedy, but he's so fucking good in Homicide.
Also, isn't that's David Simon's first show? Is that Before The Wire?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Did a rewatch of Game of Thrones, better than Transformers. Here's the thing with that last season. It's better than you remember it. When you're not having the stress of hoping that it's good, it's better.
I actually think it works better, too, as like a binge.
Yes.
Because a lot of the things that are present in season 8 are actually present in like season 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
But it had been 5 years since you had watched
100%.
Them.
The payoffs seem less fan servicey and more like, oh, this is the thing I've been part of the story I've been watching. I will say, I think the biggest thing they could have done, there should have just been one final battle. It all should have taken place at Winterfell. It starts at Winterfell. It ends at Winterfell. You still could have had Cersei come up there and betray them.
Yeah.
And had the same thing still play out. It would make a lot more sense for Jon Snow to stab Dany if she had just burned down Winterfell.
See, if you read the Stormlight Archive, you would know that Brandon Sanderson learned that exact lesson.
Oh, I may start, you know, because this is like being fantasy novel guy. That's a new thing for you, right? Or yeah, new thing-ish.
Yeah, new thing-ish.
Maybe I'll take that up as an identity, too. My prostate's getting so large. I've watched the first season of Yellowstone, better than Transformers. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was tricking old, ornery white man into thinking they weren't watching a fucking soap opera.
Yeah, yeah. I should send you my favorite podcast. My brother, and me, they did a live stream game thing where the brother who like did the worst on the game had to watch the first season of Yellowstone and report it back to the rest of them.
Right.
And that report is great.
I should say, one of the reasons I didn't want to watch it is every commercial, because, you know, I like that guy. I like Tyler Sheridan.
Yeah.
Every commercial I'd seen from it, there was some redheaded chick that in the commercial was just fucking awful. I was like, oh my God, can this chick act? Why is she here? Was this a Make-A-Wish thing? When you watch the show in context, she's the only person who gets the assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's the only person who realizes, this is a trashy soap opera, and I'm going to do some trashy fucking acting. Also started Landman.
I was about to say, it looks like the exact same show.
Yeah, but fucking better than Transformers, like it.
Love Billy Bob.
I hear it's great. I haven't watched it yet.
In music, New Cure record, better than Transformers. Yeah. Orville Peck's new record, better than Transformers. The new Red Cross, which I didn't even know there was one, better than Transformers. Do you guys know about MeTV?
No.
Oh, God, MeTV, that's my favorite thing.
Okay.
So it's this thing. First of all, it may be the only thing in this day and age that kind of doesn't want you to watch it.
Mm.
You can only watch it on fucking antenna or with one weird streaming service called Frndly that literally no one subscribes to. But it just plays like the kind of shit that would have been on like TBS or WGN in the afternoon when I was a kid. So even though it's the shit that is really the shows of like my parents, the shows of when I was a kid, like, you know, A-Team or Knight Rider or whatever, I watched once a week. These shows I watched every fucking day. So, you know, and they seem to play them right when they used to in MASH comes on like right around the beginning of dinner time. Andy Griffiths comes on like right after.
Do you think this channel is run by you in the future?
I feel like it really was because it gets exactly. I don't really want a lot of nostalgia for my youth because I it's just a straight line. It's a fucking, if it's one of those sound, you know, audio visual things, it's just a caterpillar. I've just been into the same stuff since I was a kid. Uh-huh. So I don't really have a nostalgia for it. But this shit, I was feeling nostalgia. Yeah. My favorite movie of the year, I can't think of the full name of it. I just call it TV Glow. What's the full name of it?
Yeah.
Have you seen the TV Glow or whatever?
I haven't seen it, but I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Man, you know, really reminded me of, you know, the recently late, great David Lynch a lot. Very just, you know, impressions. I think what a lot of people got from it was the messaging about sort of trans rights and stuff like that, because the director is trans. And I'm not saying that's not there. That's definitely there. But I think there's so much more to it. I think in a lot of ways, you just get what you bring to it. Like, for me, it seemed to be about, you know, people sitting in a room watching a show, but nobody's even watching the show or talking to each other, all just looking at their phones. That's what this movie felt like it was saying something about. But that probably is just what I brought into the thing. Finally, the last thing I will bring up. 2024, man, has been the year of Transformers for Jehu. That was my favorite movie. My second favorite movie was Transformers 1. That shit was better than it had any fucking right to be. I went into it thinking, oh, this will be shiny and fun. And I just actually thought it was a really great movie. Also, if you watch it on Paramount Plus, if you have on Paramount Plus, it almost always will play TMNT, Mutant Mayhem After. That's a great double feature. But just, man, I just got in, you know, the Skybound Transformer comics are still so fucking great. I just got super back into Transformer toys in this last stretch. Studio Series Optimus Prime 86, best toy ever made. You know, but probably the second best Optimus Prime came out this year, too. Legacy United G1 Optimus Prime, which was basically just a modern articulated version of like the original toy. Right. Fucking phenomenal. However, still in my main display of Transformers, I still have Earthrise there because I think he scales better with most of the Razor figures. And if there's anybody out there in podcast land who understood a fucking thing I just said, let's get together and play Transformers.
Hurt, do you feel like you have the space for a new identity?
I probably don't. That's a good point. That's a good point.
There was like a 6-month period where Jehu was active on the internet again, and his threads was exclusively rating out new albums and Transformers.
Right.
And it was pretty great.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a lot of fun on my time back on the internet, but I got to say, I regret coming back because I could have just been the biggest I told you so cunt in the world.
Yeah, you could have.
Because I had been for years, you know.
They're all evil.
Particularly fucking
Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg has ruined the world. He's worth.
Yeah, you just reminded me of something I have to say.
Okay, I was like, you looked at me so hard, I was like, did I say something racist?
No.
Just that. Him coming out in that fucking gold chain, that was like his NWO shirt. Like, it was just, he was like, I can finally turn heel. The world is finally what I wanted it to be. Fuck that guy. One of the reasons I've been off politics since the election, election's worse than Transformers, by the way. One more little aside about the elections, then I swear I'll stop talking and let you go. I decided who I blame for it. At first, I was blaming George Clooney, and I think he bears a lot of blame.
He does.
But I've decided, there's this fucking girl on Instagram, and her whole shtick is this. She comes up to the camera, and she's what I call attainable hot. Mm-hmm. She looks like, oh, I could probably do that, and you couldn't. You could not. She's too hot for you. She just wears simple makeup, so it seems like you wouldn't. And she dresses like down-home hot, you know, like low-key hot. But this is her whole shtick. She walks up to the camera, and it's like, hey, hungry? Want to make a sandwich?
Yes. Yeah.
And then she makes a sandwich that's just hypertension on a bun, and then she hands it to you. And I think that's what happened.
Mm.
I think America thought that's what life should be like, and it's not like that.
Yeah.
But anyways, I was saying something that about
Zuckerberg.
Oh. What was it? I think I was done talking about Zuckerberg. Maybe I'm done talking now. I thought I had something else to say about Zuckerberg, but maybe I didn't. Fuck that guy, worse than Trump.
There's plenty of things I did watch over the year that I'd love to talk about later, but the one thing I will say is I rewatched The Social Network, and guys, we can just fucking stop. It's the best
it's
movie.
It's the best movie.
It's the best really movie. I don't know if it's the best movie ever made. It's the best movie of the 20th century.
Right.
It's there is not a bad second. Every second is earned. It is fucking killer, no filler. That movie is excellent.
I'm not upset about when I quit the Oscars, but that was when I should have quit the Oscars. Yeah. When it was, I think King's Speech won over Social Network that year. Crazy. Social Network.
I've never watched King's Speech again.
Is both the best and still most socially relevant movie.
15 years later,
100%. I rewatched it and Val watched it for the first time. I did it like two weeks ago. And excellent. Great time.
So do you think on a future episode you will talk about The Stellar and True? Because I do have a question I want to ask you about.
Absolutely. If we ever do the podcast again.
Okay.
Another 9 months. So transitioning from hyperfixations, I got bad news. Anime's been bad this year, guys. there's not that there hasn't been any good ones since we stopped, but like there's not many. So really my suggestion is don't watch anything from 2024. 2021 was the best year for anime. Mm-hmm. Go watch anything from that year, and it's probably better than anything from this past year. As far as other things, I watched Alex Garland's Civil War.
Oh, you did watch it.
Which I had floated for an episode for this show because we're generally big on Alex Garland, and I'm glad I previewed it because that would have not been a very good episode. It's a bad movie, guys. Mm. So
bad he's decided he doesn't want to make movies anymore.
It might be okay.
Yeah. He's kind of had a run of turds.
You remember that scene in the trailer where it's Jesse Plemons?
Yeah, that's the best scene in the
movie. That's the best scene in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like 5 minutes long.
Right.
It definitely was trying, like, first off, very tough sell in this day to take media personnel and make them, like, sympathetic protagonists.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As, like, we're a very serious or a serious profession with a lot of integrity, and what we do is really important. Tough sell.
Right.
And two, I definitely feel like the whole movie, I don't know, I do not know what it was trying to tell me. I still don't.
I think it was trying to tell that. I think it was literally only that point.
No fucking clue. But definitely I feel like the whole idea was predicated on, let's see how like just crazy and like unsettling like apocalyptic America looks like.
Right.
And the problem is Last of Us just fucking did that and did a good job. And so, like, nothing in this was, like, surprising or interesting looking by comparison.
100% the reason I never watch this, because Sarah's pitched watching a few times, and my thing is, I've already seen The Road. I don't need more of it. The Road was plenty Road.
Yeah. definitely.
I was about to say, there's a middle ground between The Road and other things, but, yeah, fair enough. I've restarted, and Val's joined on with me because you can't stop once you start. Justified.
There you go.
We are on the best season, which is season 2.
Me and Sarah, this is funny. This is something that spanned the whole 8 months. Me and Sarah are doing a rewatch of Justified 2. We're on season 5.
Okay.
But it's lasted 8 months because Sarah's the most popular teenager in America.
I see.
So,
But what I didn't realize, so this is my first time watching it on an online streaming service as opposed to on FX when it came on TV.
Right.
And one of the things that I didn't realize in the first season, and I think it just you're inoculated when you're a kid watching cable television shows of like when you watch movies that are edited for TV, sometimes there's just shit missing.
Right.
You know, like it seems like a scene is cut short or there's like, you know, we moved dramatically from one place to another and you're like pretty sure there was something in between, but you know, like timing, they cut it for editing.
Right.
The first season of the show has a lot of that shit. A lot of like dialogue that seems like it just cut like right in the middle or like, should we have had like a scene of them to see them like going or like getting in a car or like doing something just to like know that they're like, there's a connection between these scenes that I had assumed when I watched it at that time that like, oh, this is, it's just TV. Like, that's what happens. We just, we miss part of the story that they didn't have time for. And I was like, no, they just didn't shoot those parts. Right. And that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
They get better at it. It doesn't happen as much in the second season. But it was just a strange thing I noticed. A different experience in streaming to watching on cable.
Here was the main thing with me and Sarah watching it. knew the "it's coming faster" scene was coming.
Oh, so good.
So, but like, I thought it happened way earlier. Yeah, than
it's pretty late.
So literally every fucking time when Duffy's on scene, I'm like, "Here it comes, Sarah! Sarah, pay attention! Here it comes!"
Same, 100%. Have you gotten to the episode after that where they relitigate? Because that's also my favorite episode.
Yeah, too.
Love it.
Yeah,
great show. Definitely the best thing that Timothy Oliphant will ever do. Same thing as Peter Dinklage in Game of Thrones. Mm. They found the thing that's like, it's a perfect glove fit for him.
Right.
And nothing else will ever live up to it in the same way.
I mean, he had a really good back-to-back. Like, he went from Deadwood to Justified, and you're like, oh, this is this guy's thing. But yeah, no, it hasn't materialized right. since then. And they've tried to replicate it and still cast him in it, and it still hasn't.
We talked about after he was in fucking The Mandalorian, just doing Justified in space again, and just bring back fucking Wally Goggs.
Do the whole damn cast.
I would love the shit out of that. But that's it for me.
Oh, one more I need to do on my rapid fire. What is everybody talking about? White Lotus, worse than Transformers.
I never watched it.
I'm tired of awful white people's cringy problems.
Can I tell you? Maybe you just caught on.
You don't
too
need
late.
To make me hate those people more. I've got it covered.
I think the first season's pretty good. I like both seasons, but yeah, whatever. Mm. It's fine.
I mean, I'll watch the third season because Wally Goggs. That's
exactly. There you go.
But
yeah.
I think that's the show, guys.
I think that's it. I told my wife, I was like, we definitely won't do an hour. Like, we haven't done an hour episode in a long time, but here we are. What, do you have more things?
Just one thing.
Jesus
on the
Christ hurt.
Okay, never mind. I won't tell this story because it's actually not short.
But, you know, thanks for bearing with us in hiatus. We'll be back eventually. I don't know what the regularity is going to be, but it'll be better than this, I think.
Better than 8 months.
Better than 8 months.
Put that rubber stamp down.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot to catch up on, so I'm sure it'll be something like that. It definitely won't be a new release because Christian and I are apparently allergic to the movie theater.
I got to pay for them now.
Yeah, no way. Absolutely no way. Because I really wanted to go see Kraven.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I'm not going to pay money to see Kraven.
I was wanting to go see, you know, even... It's weird because I did not like the first Joker. Like, I did it first, and then I decided to hate it, if you remember. Sarah loved it. But when Joker 2 came out, I was like, man, we're going to go see this weekend. She was like, you're not doing a fucking podcast.
Yeah,
because that was 100% why I wanted to see it. I was like, this is going to be a fun movie to rag on.
Yeah, anyway,
yep,
we'll be back. So thanks everybody for listening. Please rate, subscribe, tell your friends about the podcast. You know, we have a big backlog. We'll get back to it.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
You have
what
to think
up
of a new ending thing.
Yep.
Thanks to Brian Blessings for our theme.
Yeah, that's what it is. Thanks, Zach Evans for art and Brian Blessings for theme. We'll see you guys later.
Later.